to question four. This one's on federal impact and protecting local services. The Trump administration is proposing cuts to Medicaid and has cut Medicaid, education, and other federal programs, and this is likely to create fiscal pressure on the county. What steps should the county take to deal with this kind of fiscal pressure? What, if any, steps would you take to protect essential services? Ms. Green, you're up first on this one.
Okay, this is a tough question because it's a new situation. We've had a certain amount of stability and we could count on Medicaid and education and funds for parks and environmental issues, and everything is being cut. This question came up at a campaign, at a candidates forum in New Paltz, at which Mark Gallagher, our comptroller, presented, and they have done an excellent job in looking at what is our surplus, what is our reserve, and how many employees are currently affected or could be affected, and making recommendations about what can be done. I think it's something we need to absolutely face, as we need to face affordable housing and other impacts, resilience to climate change, because these are all, we have climate change on one hand and the Project 2025 agenda on the other, squeezing us. And that's why I want another term in the legislature, so that I can work with people to brainstorm and figure out how. One other point is there is an initiative sponsored by one of my colleagues, Limited Grace Harmon, and it's called the Blue Wall, where we figure this out at a local level, at a county level, at a state level, and work together to address this real crisis, double crisis, that we currently face.
Thank you. Ms. Schneider's up next.
I've been a business owner for 35 years. I'm also operating my own household. Neither my spouse nor I had any generational wealth. We know how to survive. We know contingency plans. We know how to sacrifice. We know how to cut. I have seen the $432 million budget we have. There is a lot in there. I don't think there's a lot of people who have the actual fiscal ability in our legislature to cut, cut, cut. You know, when we buy dump trucks and we buy armored tanks and things for the police department and all those drones and things for the sheriff's department, there's buzzers and bells on every device. You know, the base model comes in at X thousand, but you can like double the price. I'm in tech for decades. I know the upsell. I know how to do it. I see it all the time. We can cut, cut, cut. Special interests just have to get turned away at the door. We can do it. But I'm most concerned about our most vulnerable. And this is not a philosophy. It doesn't come from any platform. It comes from the fact that I grew up in a household. It turned out we were like going to do really well. Like everybody thought we're doing really well. Turns out my dad got brain cancer and when I was 10. Died right before my 13th birthday. My mom then got breast cancer. I was the eldest of everyone, not just of my immediate family, of my entire generation. I was the first to speak English as a primary language in my family. We were working poor. I know how to survive and thrive, but it's hard decisions. I would like to see the county's contingency budget. I asked a few people at the legislature so far about whether we got one. They say we got one, but nobody's showing it. So there's a lot we can do, but we have to be really, really willing to do it and protect our most vulnerable. I know what being a most vulnerable person is, because if it wasn't for services and supports when I grew up, I wouldn't be here today. Thank you.
Ms. Grossman?
So with Donald Trump in office, there's clearly a systematic teardown of our Constitution and our democratic principles. And I just want to ground us in the budget. The budget is $440 million, and $50 million of it comes from federal funding. And obviously, we use that for people who are the most needy. So we need to be smart in how we protect people. The first thing is, we haven't talked about what the legislature does. Not everyone knows. One of the first things that you're supposed to do in the legislature is appropriate the budget. Make sure that money is going to the things that it's supposed to be going to. Make tough trade-offs. Sit with the county exec Metzger's office and understand what the priorities are and collaborate together. We need people in the legislature who actually understand how to balance budgets and run businesses. I have done that at massive scale. And number two, we need to make sure we're investing in legal resources. As we all know, in blue states, we will work with the state level, but we also need to do it here at the county. We need to make sure we have the right lawyers to sue Donald Trump and his administration and bring things to the court, because we know when we both go to the streets and we get lawyers in the courtroom, there sometimes is an opportunity to shut stuff down, and we need to make sure that we're resourced here at the county level. Number three, we're going to work with people at the state and the national level. Let me give you an example. Just last weekend, Congressman Josh Riley was working with my campaign on a small business roundtable, and we were talking about what are the issues, how are we going to go apply for funding when Donald Trump cuts it? How are we going to make sure we have sidewalks here in High Falls? And so I am already doing the work to make sure that our county is prepared and has partners at all levels of government, because this is what it's going to take. The other thing that I want to highlight is you need to elect someone who has strong relationships with also across other states, because when the Trump administration starts removing healthcare data so that our Department of Health can't access vaccine rates, we need to make sure we can communicate with other blue states.
Additional comments on this one?
I think communicating with other blue states is not the role of a legislator in Ulster County. I think that would be more the role of our state legislators. Thank you very much.
Okay, let's move on to question five. We've talked a little bit about this already, but it's a more specific question about economic development and small businesses. The 25 county budget includes a $1.2 million revolving loan fund for small businesses. And the Economic Development Department is seeking $300,000 in state funding for micro grants to support small entrepreneurs facing barriers to financing. What legislative measures would you advocate for to support small businesses and economic development while maintaining community character? First up for this one is Ms. Schneider.
First off, I would make sure that every single business in our community across our county knows about these things, and not just people who are on the special lists and get the notices. I would also make sure the stuff's known about before. You know, a lot of times these press releases, by the time they end up in the newspaper, the waiting lists are all full up, the applications are all in, because insiders know. I would totally change how we do outreach for any kind of resources, jobs, financial subsidies, anything. And I also want to say that the business community is one of the biggest lobbyists and special interests we have going. And I am a business owner, okay? But I've seen business on the inside, I've seen business on the outside, not just as an employee of other people's businesses, but as a primary person in the business world. And I've also been a part of the Ulster County business community. I've been a founding board member of four different organizations and treasurer of two. I was CEO of my company until I dissolved the corp. I'm no longer a corporation about a couple of years ago. But we need to be fair and equitable if we're going to do economic development. It isn't so fair.
Ms. Grossman.
First off, let me say this is a top priority that I've spent a lot of time on, not just my career, but here in the community. I am proud to have the support of 90% of the small businesses on the main street of Rosendale, Stone Ridge, and High Falls. You've seen them in the videos. You've seen them at our events. It's because we are spending time talking about the issues. There are a number of challenges that small businesses are facing. First of all, we have aging businesses who want to retire. People who've had their businesses on the market for a long time, David's Bodacious Bagels, the Spy's up for sale now. We need to make sure that we have to be able to bridge the gap. There's people in their 20s and 30s and 40s who would love to own a restaurant, or would love to open a bookstore, but there's clearly a financing gap. When I went and asked both the successful small businesses and the ones that are struggling on Main Street, what's the number one issue you're facing? They all said housing. if their people who are washing dishes in the kitchen or serving food or working at the checkout, if they cannot afford housing, then they can't run small businesses. Number two, we need to talk about access to financing. This is clearly an issue, especially when the cost of borrowing right now is so high and the price of doing business is so high because of tariffs. You talk about all of the businesses locally, what that is going to do to them. It's really killing folks. The county government has an opportunity to be a creative partner to fill some of these financing gaps, like the one that Professor just mentioned. But also we have an opportunity to bridge the gap and incentivize local banks to keep investment local. I've spent a lot of time with ConnectHV, which is an entrepreneurship network here in the Hudson Valley. We have opportunities to bring investors here and to invest in people who've grown up here. Like I said before, there's a reason that Congressman Riley and many others are rallying around this campaign to talk about small businesses. It's because it's the heart of these three villages and towns, and I'm ready to serve them.
Ms. Green.
When it comes to business, my specific background is that I studied and became a trainer for the Natural Step for Businesses, which is a way of promoting sustainability, both economic sustainability and environmental sustainability. And for many years, I taught and worked with businesses. I go to all of the Chamber of Commerce meetings because that's where I learn what is going on with business in the county and in the region. I think that some of the issues that have been raised are very valid. I want to be sure that funding that is available is, that the businesses are aware of that. And I just bemoan the fact that Rosendale once had a very active Chamber of Commerce. And I don't know why, but we no longer do, and I think that that would be a very good next step. I expect that Marbletown still does, but Rosendale reactivating the Chamber of Commerce, I think, would be a really good step. But I think one of the most important things with business is to find a way to balance economic viability and environmental protection, and the two can be synergistic and not in conflict with each other.
Ms. Schneider?
I mourn the loss of the Rosendale Chamber of Commerce because I was a member. And what broke it up? Outside money, outside influence, special interest, not the needs of the local businesses. And when we talk about the Chamber of Commerce, when we talk about businesses, our district has many, many businesses. They're not all on Main Streets. We have many, many businesses, and when we think about them, we need to think about all of them. The other thing is, when I'm running to support the people of my district, the businesses in my district can join the Chamber of Commerce, the Ulster County Chamber of Commerce, and there are other business entities. It's not the role of government.
That's
to
time. Any other rebuttals on this?
Prioritize private.
That's time, Ms. Schneider.
Thank you.
Ms. Grossman?
I just want to respond very quickly. Small businesses employ people. We need to make sure that we have good paying jobs for people so that people grow up here, can stay and afford to live here.
Yeah.
Let's move on. Did you want to? No. Okay. Let's move on to question number six. Different topic. How would you approach working with Republican colleagues in the Ulster County Legislature? And what experience do you bring that demonstrates your ability to deliver results for constituents? For this one, Ms. Grossman is up first.
Finding compromise with people who disagree on a lot of issues is something that I have 20 years of experience doing. Whether that's working on trade deals between countries, whether that's bringing the Indian government together with a small business company to figure out how we can make sure there's more technology available to people. This is something I'm very good at. I think, first of all, it's about demeanor. I think when you make a decision on June 24th about who you're going to vote for, you should be asking who's the person who can have tough conversations in a calm and collected manner. I think you should also find someone who's curious, because I actually find that there are ways to find agreement with the other side, especially when it has to do with clean water, making sure our schools are safe, that our local small businesses thrive. Those are actually not red or blue issues. Those are people issues. And in local politics, we have a chance to break down some of those beliefs that are very toxic at the national level. And I think there have been times when the legislature has been able to work across both sides. Maybe I'll pause there, but I just think that, again, finding agreement is about demeanor, and it's about who's fit to lead an office, and who's going to also put their foot down when, you know, we also do recognize that the Republican Party is completely toxic and a party of one. So I also want to be realistic on that front.
Ms. Green.
I do actively work across the aisle in the Ulster County Legislature and have a good working relationship. I will say that in my 11 years of serving on the legislature and following it for at least 20 pretty closely, I think this is the most bipartisan legislature, the greatest amount of cooperation and the least political enmity that I have experienced. In particular, each of the legislatures has something to contribute. Legislator Litz is an engineer, and his comments are often brilliant across the aisle, and I could go on and on, but I do think that what puzzles me the most is how these, for the most part, very valuable contributors, how do they deal with what's going on in Washington? I haven't been able to have that conversation across the aisle. I have been able to work across the aisle on many, many issues and do so successfully, and I think I have a lot of support on both sides of the aisle. But it's just beyond me. How do you get up in the morning? If we're a Democrat, we understand what's going on and we expect that. But if you're a Republican, did you vote for Trump? And if you did, what do you think about what's going on with these cuts, with Social Security being threatened, Medicare, et cetera? So that's a conversation I have not yet had.
Thank you. Ms. Stein.
Wow. I've talked to Republicans in the legislature about some of these issues. It's not all one big red solid conglomerate wall. But I am also going to be on an independent line in the general election for this race. I collected over 328 signatures from people who were mostly not Democrats in our community. So for like the first time almost ever, a Democrat person, a progressive person, knocked on their door and spoke with them. And I want to tell you, we have a very diverse community. You know, just because they're Republican and that's how they're registered on the poll, on the voting list, doesn't necessarily mean they're happy with what's going on. And there's a lot of regret. There is a lot of buyer's remorse. But I got to tell you what, folks, there's a lot of buyer's remorse with the Democrats, too. And I am neither. I am essentially not a party person. I enrolled as a Democrat at the end of December to be in this race. I am really an independent because I am done with parties, because we can't just have this binary of us and them. We don't just have, like, all heterosexual or gay, all man or all woman, all black or all white, even. We have, like, incredibly diverse people and communities. So why is our politics all or nothing? It's us versus them. As long as we have an us versus a them, and that's your headset, you're going to have across the aisle. How do we deal with them, the other? That is not who I am. That is not what's in my heart. I may not agree with my neighbors, but I have a great place and a great way to meet them where they're at and talk with them without biases and preconceived notions or expecting it's going to be my way or the highway. I have a lot of, we come there different, we come to it from different places, but I have been on the same side of legislation with Republicans in the legislature on
That's
more than
time.
One
Thank
occasion.
You.
Thank you.
Any additional thoughts on this one? No? Great. Okay, let's return to the climate and sustainability briefly. The climate crisis requires urgent local action alongside federal and state efforts. I wouldn't count on federal efforts anytime soon. What specific legislative measures would you support to accelerate Ulster County's work on this? How would you balance environmental priorities with economic development ones and affordability ones? Ms. Green, you're up first on this.
As I should be. This happens to be my greatest strength. I chair the Climate Smart Committee, and I also chair or facilitate the Ulster County 70 by 30 Renewable Energy Working Group. And this is a brain trust of people who know how to get it done. And by it, I mean implementing the state's very aggressive climate action plan and also our county executive order and commitment to climate solutions. One of the projects we're working on is a potentially 20 megawatt of renewable energy in New Paltz around the traffic circle and along the thruway corridor from the high school to the landfill. And that includes what was the Government Operations Center is now being called the Emergency Coordination Center. But the facility that will deal with all of the emergency issues in Ulster County, that central facility also has room in an abandoned apple orchard, which can't be used for much else, but would be an excellent large solar array. So we are actively working with Central Hudson, and I agree that I'd like to see Central Hudson become a municipal authority, but I also, they are our utility right now, so working collaboratively and positively with them is a real asset to ensure the transition to a renewable energy economy with storage and efficiency.
Ms. Schneider.
We should be building public renewable energy, public grids, microgrids, getting off the reliance on the long haul grid. It's, you know, look at your bill. What are you paying for? Delivery. So if we take delivery out and we localize it a little bit more, we're going to do better. The other thing is we have to watch about climate justice, because we call these green buses, but not all of them are getting charged with renewable energy at this point. We're plugging them into the grid. We're paying the electric bill of Central Hudson. We can't call them green because the people down in Orange County and Newburgh are not experiencing the green that we're making them suffer with. I think we have to stop being performative and gotta be a lot more real. And I think we need to, again, stop with the special interests. Stop propping up people and businesses and industries that don't need our public good money. We are in a real crisis. Yes, for people, and yes, for climate. It's people and planet. There is no profit until that's taken care of. Thank you.
Ms. Carson.
Climate change is not going to be addressed by a sole government solution. It needs to be in partnership with startups who are building green energy technology at a much faster rate than any government will ever legislate. There needs to be partnership. I am hopeful about the Hudson Valley Power Authority's ability to increase renewable investment at a faster rate than SenHud is currently doing. I also am hopeful that the Hudson Valley Power Authority can actually bring some peace of mind, because every month you pay your electricity bill, there are continual surprises, and despite supposed to fixing their payment system, they still have not fixed it in a way that's consistent and predictable for families. You know, as I talked to, for example, Sarah Hanna-Schressa's team, who's leading this, my advice to her chief of staff was we need to make sure that this works for labor unions. There is some fear and uncertainty about actually how a public takeover would impact our workers. There is a clause in that proposal to keep the employment part of the of Central Hudson, to maintain that as a private sector initiative, so that the labor, our workers could actually maintain the same clauses that they have in their contract, which they're actually quite happy with today. And the other thing that I think we need to get right is how we're talking about financing the Hudson Valley Power Authority. I think there's a lot of fear and uncertainty that it's going to cause increases on our own taxpayers. That is not true. I encourage people to go watch the presentation about how it's going to be funded through debt and bonding. But I'm hopeful about these things, but we got to work through the kinks of some of these other things and also get the communications right. I'll go back to what I said earlier. I know I used the waste diversion conversation to talk about environment more broadly, since that was the second part of your initial question. I also want to highlight that we need to be increasing EV charging stations, and I'm really hopeful about moving a lot of the county's fleet to electric vehicles, but there's still more opportunity there. And lastly, on the waste diversion side, we definitely have ways to optimize how we transport our trash all the way to Seneca Falls.
That's time. Thank you. Any additional thoughts on this one? No? Great. Let's switch to agriculture. Ulster County ranks third statewide in fruit and apples production, with agriculture consisting almost entirely of small farms. Local farmers face challenges including development pressures, rising costs, and access to land. What measures would you advocate for to support Ulster County's agriculture sector and preserve farmland? Ms. Schneider, you're up first, followed by Ms. Grossman.
Well, we have to be able to put a stop to extremely invasive development. That agricultural land is very vulnerable. We have to make sure we support our farmers, subsidize our farmers. We have to make sure we're buying a lot of their food. One of my, you know, if we, here's mental health is one of the things on my platform. It hasn't come up yet. But one of the things that goes a long way to help that is put people in houses that they know will exist, they have a roof over their head, and give them some food to eat, that they know they'll have food today and tomorrow and the next day. And we have an incredible way to be locally sustainable. We are so lucky to have farms, you know, and farms that grow food we can eat, and we do eat, and we need to maximize the food to everyone, the local food to everyone, and not just have these, you know, fun little, we need to grow our food co-op. I want to plug in for the food co-op. We need to have food co-ops all over the place. We actually need to have co-ops, business co-ops, and all sorts of co-ops all over the place. But that's a whole nother story for economic development. It's a different tack from financing and that kind of stuff. Thank you.
Ms. Grossman.
Supporting our farmers is a top priority. In fact, when I was thinking about whether I should run for this seat, one of the very first calls that I had was to Matt Igo. He leads the Rondout Valley Growers Association. And I said, Matt, let's talk about the issues that our farmers are facing. Today, locally and nationally, a large proportion of our farmers are retiring. And that also means we have, on the other end, a large percentage of current farmers are actually in their 20s and 30s. And the issue here is, yet again, housing. Because sometimes the retired farmers are ready to sell their land, or at least lease it, if not sell it. But they can't yet give up their home, right? They've paid off their mortgage. They want to retire and enjoy the home on their property. What that means is the new farmer in their 20s and 30s who want to buy that land, they have nowhere to live. And a farmer needs to live on their land. It's a 24/7 job. And so not only can they not find a house on the farm, they also can't find a house in the general proximity of Ulster County. And so this is a real problem, because people are gonna age out of our farms and we're gonna have no one left to farm them if we don't fix our housing issue. Additionally, this isn't just for the farmers who are leading, the farmers who own the land or who run the business. This is also for their seasonal labor. You talk about what's going on at Stone Ridge Orchard. You talk about back home farms. their people who come in and out on seasonal labor, and their workforce doesn't have housing either. So this is a clear issue that we need to address. I also want to talk about other ways to support farmers are making sure that we shorten the transport time from where the food is growing to where it's being served in the point of sale. I am proud to work in partnership with a High Falls Food Co-op. They're doing amazing work. They just got rid of their clamshell plastic for salads, by the way. Good job. But we need to do more to make sure that those businesses can thrive and at scale.
Ms. Quinn.
Yes, many years ago, there was a rift in Ulster County between the environmental community and the ag community, partly over aerial spraying of pesticides. And so it was such a bitter conflict that we weren't able to get a farmland protection plan passed. And I brought everyone together, and we created the Hudson Valley Harvest by Local campaign. We measured what was the distance that 20 different products traveled, and we did that for farm stands and large supermarkets and everything in between. And it was a very effective coalition that focused on buying local. And we got the farmland protection passed. Now I am actively working on, we've trained over 150 people from 50 municipalities in wise solar siting that protects our farms, our prime farmland, and doesn't allow people to cut down forests, which help draw down and sequester greenhouse gases. So there is a solution that benefits farmers, and that's called agrivoltaics, where it's appropriate, there can be both solar and grazing or crops on farmland, and that extra income makes those farms more viable. So it's an area I've worked on and with for very many years, and used collaboration to create solutions.
Thank you. Any follow-ups on that? Ms. Schneider?
Every roof in the county that the county owns should have solar, that's viable, should have solar on it already. Thank you.
Okay. With that, we'll move to our final question, actually. We were swift tonight, but we're going to go in again in a different direction here. Though it has since been removed, the Department of Homeland Security recently published a list identifying sanctuary jurisdictions that included Ulster County and several towns within its borders. What role, if any, should the county legislature play in this issue? What could include, this issue being immigration. That could include enforcement, cooperation, and support for immigrant communities. Ms. Grossman, you're up first.
So Donald Trump has weaponized DHS and ICE, and at his orders, they're clearly not respecting the rule of law, our habeas corpus. They're also, simply shutting down freedom of speech and taking people off of our streets and challenging the pillars of democracy while they do all of those things. But here in Ulster County and in the broader state of New York, it's clear that we have laws that protect people, and we need to make sure that we're enforcing them properly. No court, hospital, school, shelter, place of worship, or any other place should be allowing ICE officials to detain people without a court-ordered warrant. We need to ensure that our county police officers, under the leadership of Sheriff Figueroa, are trained to distinguish what is a lawful warrant versus a bogus one. It's happened. I've talked to officials who are working in our county and family court judicial offices. We need to make sure that not just our local police officers know how to tell the difference, but also the private security officers that are in our hospitals, that are at our schools. Everyone needs to know the process of what happens when they show up. Who do you call? What do you say? Can we take videos? Can we take photos? And so we also need to be working with the county clerk's office who runs the DMVs. I was talking with Taylor Brook, who's our acting county clerk and is most likely, is running unopposed to earn another term. People are scared to get their driver's license renewed. We need to make sure that they know this is a safe place. We don't ask for your immigration status when you come to renew your driver's license. These are the things that our county legislature needs to make sure that we're funding and that we're working across different governments, both locally and across the state.
Ms. Green.
Yeah, we are very lucky here in Ulster County that we have elected people who will protect immigrants and immigrants' rights. Our sheriff is absolutely committed to ensuring their protection and preventing ICE from tearing families apart and sending people to essentially detention camps. And our county executive and all across the board, I think that it is one of the most disastrous aspects of the current administration. The fact that people that are helping our economy by working in the jobs, in the fields, in the restaurants, can no longer feel safe coming home from work if there is a place that they're coming home to. So I absolutely will do everything we can, and I know the entire legislature feels this way. But I have gone door to door and heard people talk about the fact that immigrants are getting benefits that they didn't pay into, and there are a lot of prejudices that need to be broken down. But I do think that Ulster County has people who care, understand, and will do everything we can to protect everyone in the community and not allow and not cooperate with ICE.
Thank you. Ms. Stein.
Some of our social service agencies have put out massive training on this. They've trained all their people, like Family of Woodstock has lots of shelters. They've trained everybody to know what the difference between a valid warrant and an invalid warrant looks like, what's an administrative warrant versus a judicial warrant. This stuff is happening there, but the county could mandate that all of the contractors that provide services for the county have these trainings put into place. Some of the school districts do, but all the school districts should have it. The county could fund the informational piece so that it's out there on websites and in handouts and on stickers on telephone poles and everywhere we can get the word out to the community, but certainly working with the immigrant community, because we have a wonderful immigrant defense community, and they've been doing this. The government is usually the last to know. The government finds out about these things, the sheriff finds out about these things when ICE shows up. They don't knock on their door and let them know they're coming. So really it's the people who need to be armed with this knowledge so that they can act appropriately. And they have the resources to call. So we should have those resources available, like legal support, things like that.
Ms. Grossman, then Ms. Green.
One more thing that I wanted to add is that the county government is responsible for funding social services, and we need to make sure that our public defenders and our immigration lawyers are well connected to those social services so that when people are taken, that their children are able to have a roof over their head. And that is service, and that's work that's done here in our county. And we need to make sure that those things are well connected and buttoned up so no child is left behind.
Ms. Green.
Yeah, and there are excellent programs to help people who are vulnerable to know their rights. And I think we need to have more of those, and the legislature can help by sponsoring those.
Thank you. In a moment, I'm going to call up John Schwartz to make some final announcements, but I want to personally thank the candidates and the Rosendale and Marbletown Democratic Committees for allowing me to moderate this evening. And I want to remind everyone that primary election day is Tuesday, June 24th, and early voting begins June 14th.